everybody. This is Mike Burke, partner with law firm of Arnold Golden Gregory. I am resident in the Washington, D.C. office where I'm a corporate lawyer, but I also co-head the firm's international initiative, and my practice has a significant focus on businesses coming out of the island of Ireland. Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Lorna Khan, who is the CEO of CPL in Dublin. And we're going to talk about a couple things, but maybe most about Brand Ireland. But before we do that, Lauren, if you could introduce yourself, maybe say a few words about you and your experience and CPL.
Absolutely. And hi, Mike. Lovely to join you today. So I am CEO of CPL. I'm also the Senior Managing Executive Officer of Outsourcing Inc. And Outsourcing Inc. is listed on the Tokyo Stock Exchange and is our parent company. And CPL was acquired by OSI back in January 2021. So a little bit about CPL. We're a talent solutions organization. We operate across the entire talent spectrum from specialized recruitment in every sector, right the way through to volume recruitment, managed services, business process outsourcing, and our strategic thought leadership platform, CPL's The Future of Work Institute. We've over 13,000 staff and employees, and we operate in 13 countries worldwide.
Great. So as you know, it's Patrick's Week here in the U.S., or like I said, more accurately, it seems like it's now taking up 2 weeks, where we started the week in New York at the Stock Exchange, and now we're back in D.C. With a lot of Irish government and Irish business officials. And one of the things that I think really comes home, if you will, is the degree in which Irish businesses and Irish companies have access to decision makers, political and otherwise, here in the United States. So, which leads to the broad description of Brand Ireland. So in your thinking, how would you define the Irish brand or Brand Ireland on the business side of that equation?
I think Ireland is a very hospitable country to do business. I think it's very accessible for businesses to come and invest. It gives great access to a talented workforce. We're one of the most highly educated workforces in the world. We're relatively young. Our economy is very open. And I think the policies and the protocols that the government have put in place in Ireland are such that they are very hospitable, I suppose, for businesses to come in and establish themselves. In terms of the US-Ireland relationship, I think we have a deep, rich history dating right the way back probably to the time of the Great Famine, when there was large-scale immigration from Ireland to the US. And we've got a really great diaspora over in Ireland and a strong affinity, I think, between the two cultures. I believe in the last, in the census in 2022, I think 31.5 million Americans identified as Irish Americans. So
that's
that
right,
really
yeah.
speaks volumes yeah. in terms of the relationship between Ireland and the US.
Well, and it also seems that it's one of those relationships where, at least on the U.S. side, we've been able to sort of take on the best of Ireland, and not just from the people perspective, but perspective, values, things like that, that have really profoundly influenced the U.S. since, like you said, well, probably before the Great Famine, probably going back almost to the initial settlement of this country. One thing I wanted to touch on, and that is education. And obviously, Ireland is most highly educated countries in the European Union and probably elsewhere. And, you know, personally, I think of my dad, who's now 89. And when his parents died, they had no money except for the $1,000 that my grandparents left each of their children to go to college.
That's incredible. And, you know, that really does speak, I think, to the ethos of the Irish person and the people within Ireland. There is a strong emphasis and focus on education, and education being one of life's great levelers. I also believe that the cost of education comparatively to other countries, the US, using the US as an example, you know, was quite reasonable. It's not unnecessarily prohibitive. Like most students, they don't have personal loans that they've taken out to go to college. And certainly in my time, I have a twin sister, I was very fortunate. But when I went to college, it was at a time of free education. So college fees were free. Now they've crept in over the years, but still very modest relative to many countries.
And so I'm a father of a high school senior who's now going through the college application process. And, you know, Trinity, for example, their fee schedule for a foreign student what we would pay on an in-state basis in Virginia. And I've had people from Trinity and other places say, well, it's way too expensive to come to Ireland as a foreign student. I'm thinking the exact same price or less.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do have lots of foreign students coming to Ireland, you know, probably to avail of the high quality education, but also to learn the English language. Right. And again, of course, sometimes the price can be a real factor.
Yeah. And another important role in Ireland's economy of being a, you know, an incubator of ideas and businesses. And, you know, we see this through virtually every university seems to have an innovation center. You know, Nova down at UCD, University of Galway has theirs, et cetera. I mean, this is a real success story.
Absolutely. And I think the government have done a great job in incentivizing founders and entrepreneurs and startup companies to really invest in the space of, you know, entrepreneurialism and innovation. And there is certainly a lot of support out there for those types of activities that really drive innovation. We're a small country, you know, with a small open economy, and we have to create our own differentiation in life. And I think we are becoming well known as being a hub for or an incubator for innovation and R&D and new thinking. And many of our real successful business stories have been organizations that have started out in Ireland, have been headquartered here, and have grown and scaled into the US. So we've a number of kind of successful Irish companies that have gone on to great success in the US.
There was a number discussed earlier this week in New York at the Stock Exchange that Irish companies employ upwards of 350,000 Americans in the United States, which puts Ireland at ninth position overall in terms of foreign direct investment in the States, which for a country of 6.5 million people is just incredible.
It really is an incredible statistic. And I think likewise, in terms of US companies investing in Ireland and hiring Irish people, there's another great stat, I'm sure that reflects the level of investment from US businesses who come to Ireland and establish their EMEA head office or, you know, a regional head office, and they tap into the talented workforce that are here existing in Ireland. And I do feel that there's a great affinity between the two cultures, you know, in terms of even just the logistical aspect of working in the US and Ireland. There's an easy enough flight path.
You know, now we're 4 hours time difference for part of the year, five for the rest. And yeah, I mean, it's not like you said, it's easy. You know, there's not a lot of hoops to jump through in order to have conversations like these.
Absolutely not. And, you know, we're the only EU speaking country. So we're, you know, we're the access into Europe for, you know, for non-European companies and people who want to invest in Ireland, and we have the English language. So yeah, there's a lot of pluses, I think, to doing business in Ireland.
Well, and as somebody reminded me yesterday in connection with Cillian Murphy winning the Oscar, Cork is the second largest English-speaking country in the European Union. That was the lead of it. It wasn't that Ireland's the only one. Cork is the second largest city.
Absolutely. But you know what, Mike, the IDA have done a really superb job in regionalizing Ireland and moving the nucleus of our country away from Dublin to strategic hubs, Galway, Cork,
you know. Absolutely. Yeah, they've really done a great job spreading it out, because obviously Dublin has some challenges now with housing prices and things like that. But yeah, IDA really does take a whole Republic of Ireland approach to these investment projects.
Absolutely. And look, you have to open up the talent pool in a country our size. It has to be opened up nationally. And the focus on education is quite equally reflective across the country. And, you know, when you create opportunities for investment in regions in the West, for instance, it enables people who are perhaps born there to relocate and get really good gainful employment. So, you know, everybody wins in that scenario when you open up your country and to better regionalization and move the dependency away from the capital.
You know, returning home to work scenario is, I think, in Irish history, relatively new, because traditionally, you know, you would graduate university and maybe you'd work in Dublin or Cork, or you'd emigrate to the UK or the United States and not come back. But now we do see a fair number of overseas Irish returning.
And I think the advent of hybrid working, like a real established remote working practices post-COVID has opened up huge amounts of opportunity for individuals. Because before, productivity equated to presenteeism
right.
in the main, whereas COVID plunged us into this real life experiment whereby we had to understand if you could be productive away from the office. And I think we've proven that theory, and now it's become an embedded practice of most companies. And we find ourselves in CPL that candidates expect remote working practices and the yeah. option to work flexibly as an entitlement. It's not a benefit anymore. So, you know, organizations have had to shut down their borders, let's say, you know, and open up the office to a much more flexible structure.
And speaking for a moment, my other role at the firm, you know, managing the Washington, D.C. office, there's been this evolution, if you will, of our thinking, because coming out of COVID, the initial reaction was, let's get everybody back into the office as soon as possible, 5 days a week. And there was a lot of pushback on that. And, you know, at that time, too, when we were interviewing lateral candidates, that question, you know, it was the first question most interviewees asked. It wasn't salary. It wasn't track to partnership. It wasn't the things that we would have expected prior to COVID. It was, what's your remote working situation? And I think now, whereas then we've kind of taken aback by it. You know, the question, you know, it's like, you know, how dare you not want to be in the office?
And to be honest with you, the remote working has opened us all up to a new life of working mm-hmm. that I think many of us just are not prepared to give up. And certainly in the context of CPL, our remote working practices is, you know, you're required to come into the office 2 days per week. But we try to bring people back into the office in a very meaningful way. So they're coming to collaborate, they're coming to right. meet large teams. It's an anchor day where their entire team comes in. Because, you know, the consensus generally is that people are most productive at home. Because you forget yes. the amount of time that's embedded in your working day, just chatting by the water cooler, yes. or, you know, going for
or
lunch.
Commuting.
Or, you
yeah.
know, there's a
yeah.
lot of redundant, non-productive time embedded in your working day. In the office.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we look, you know, now we're 3 years on from, at least in the States, this, you know, the end of COVID or the end of the COVID restrictions. And we look back at our productivity in second half of 2020 and 2021, and it was off the charts. Financially, you know, for almost every law firm in the US, for example, it was their best financial year. Really doesn't take a genius to figure out why, because you're not spending anything on marketing or travel. And you're, you know, my commute went from an hour each way to a minute walking down the stairs in my house.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I have to say, you know, it has been a hugely liberating aspect of the new working regime, I suppose, that we have in CPL. Because I think when you allow people to work remotely and to work flexibly, you're telling them that you trust them. And it's
yeah.
a very empowering feeling that your organization is letting you work in your own time, in your own home, and entrusting in you that you are going to meet the demands and the needs of your internal and external customers. And, you know, we've been monitoring productivity very closely since day one, which was, I think, the weekend before St. Patrick's Day, where we had suddenly had to close down every office
yep.
and relocate. We honestly thought we were going to be gone for 2 weeks, Mike.
I
most
remember,
people in the world yep. thought that.
We were planning three weeks. I'll never forget this. We were at the Ireland Fund's dinner here in Washington, and I was sitting with the group from Tourism Ireland. And that was when they announced the shutdown of air travel internationally, and just how quickly that all happened. And then, like you said, we were predicting 3 weeks internally. And obviously, we were a little bit wrong.
And we had just been, had started to try Microsoft Teams.
Yes.
So people thankfully had it on their PCs. You know, we were never so relieved to have the functionality, at least something in our arsenal to keep the engagement and the communication alive.
Yeah, literally the weekend before that, we'd had a firm-wide test where everybody brought their laptops home and everybody tried to log in at the same time on a Saturday morning. And not, you know, anticipating that kind of shutdown, it was a stress test. And then, thank God we did it, because we were all remote for the next year or so.
It's incredible. And I think there is a body of thought that perhaps we'll navigate our way back to the old normal, which is, you know, into the office 5 days a week.
Yeah.
I really hope our new normal is that remote working and flexible work.
Well, and I like what you said earlier about making sure that when employees do come into the office, that it's meaningful, right? It's, you know, you're fostering collaboration and, or I would call it cross-pollinization. But what does CPL do to foster that?
Yeah, so our head office, now, as I mentioned, we've over 13,000 staff, but the internal staff component is about 1,200, and that's across about 47, 48 offices across our 13 countries. But our main HQ, our head office, is there to support 450 employees, but we only took out desk space for about 220. And in addition to that, we've lots of different kind of flexible working areas like collab spaces, kind of phone booths, little mini pods or double pods, you know, lots of places that people can work in private, but still be within an office environment. So we've mandated really all of our teams to have at least one anchor day. So it means that no matter what size the team is, there's space allocated to that team for them all to be together one day a week. And then they can, you know, they can have their team meetings. They might end up going out for a drink afterward, yeah, or going out for lunch or something like that. It's a real meaningful way to come together and engage in the office, rather than the sense being we're in the office because we're being told to be in the office and we have to be here. You know, we want people to come to the office, enjoy the experience and get something out of it ultimately.
Right. I mean, how many times pre-pandemic did we come into the office and you have minimal interaction with your colleagues because you're trying to get something out the door, right? I mean, I would argue that you're better off doing that at home and then focusing your collaborative efforts when you've got the team in the office.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can thrive off the buzz and the atmosphere amongst the team when you're doing team-related activity. But if you've got a deadline or a tender to complete or a set of accounts to pull together, honestly, quietness of your home in your own time is the most productive environment, I think, to achieve what you need to achieve there.
So let me pivot just really quickly to the question. You know, we were talking about Brand Ireland. Obviously, the discussion this week is focused also on some of the headwinds that people are starting to see. What do you see in terms of future challenges or headwinds to the economic stability and economic growth in Ireland?
Well, I think the geopolitical picture is very worrying. And I think, you know, every country and every company is going to be feeling the impact of that. I think we live in a very worrying, uncertain climate at the minute, sadly. So that's probably kind of the biggest overarching condition that we're facing as a brand, let's say. The second thing, I suppose, is we've got some internal infrastructure challenges that we're looking to overcome. Obviously, housing, you know, the rate of the population increasing, which includes a good degree of migrant workers coming into Ireland, which is great. But our capacity to scale housing in line with the population growth hasn't matched. So there's been an undersupply relative to demand. So the government is working very hard to stimulate better growth in that area so we can create housing for all, I suppose, that meets the demands, the people within Ireland and obviously the businesses who are looking to hire good people. That's definitely a challenge. And then I suppose broader infrastructural challenges might be just improving general transportation. I know we had some projects that would have been live and ready to go during the Celtic era. We had the financial collapse and the crash that lasted for a good 10 years. So we're coming out the other side of a period of pause, I suppose, when it comes to significant investment in terms of capital projects for transport and housing, et cetera. And I think the government and Brand Ireland are working hard to work through those challenges as we've come out the other side and we're now into a period of growth. We're just trying to make sure that everything is caught up with the opportunity that sits in front of us.
No bubble this time.
Yes, absolutely. I think, that was a hard lesson learned.
On the housing side, one of the interesting things for me, and I might get the math wrong on this, but Ireland has accepted about 100,000 Ukrainian refugees, which would equate to roughly, you know, if the U.S. did it at a similar rate, would equate to about 7 million in the U.S., which to me is just incredible that, you know, again, doors are open. You know, you've got people who are in need of that, of a safe haven.
And look, Ireland has gone through its own period of unrest and difficulty, and we are the land of 1,000 welcomes. So I think absolutely we did our part in terms of welcoming our neighbours, our European neighbours, during a very, very difficult time for them. And I think the government, you know, they worked quickly to relax the visa requirements to get accommodation in place. And they, you know, they had to be innovative and look at numbers of different types of housing options to be able to support that level of immigration that came in to our country in a relatively short period of time. And I think they did a good job. I mean, it was a period of crisis for any country that was taking in a large number of people within a very short period, and the government had to mobilise quickly. I think during the Celtic Tiger boom, you know, it would have been reported that we would have built 90,000 houses.
At its height
height of it. Now, if you strip it back, probably the consensus is that it's probably smaller to 75,000.
Yeah.
Whereas the country now is building houses at half that rate.
It's a bit more sustainable at half that rate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, we need a bit more. So all of that is a challenge that the government is working through.
Yeah.
You know, together with people in the industry who are actually doing the building.
Correct. Yeah. You know, and sort of, you know, you'd mentioned the 2008, 2009 collapse that we in the States exported around the world when our banks started to fail on the mortgage default swaps. But you know, one of the things that stuck with me about that was the sense that, at least in Ireland, that the, you know, Irish people were making money off of other Irish people, which didn't sit well with some folks, and you know, some feel it was a consequence of, you know, of that attitude.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we all remember when Lehman Brothers collapsed, that was kind of the start of the end, really, wasn't it? And we went through a very difficult period going through our own financial collapse and coming out the other side. And I think, you know, from a European perspective, Ireland should really be the poster child for a country that has serious financial challenges, puts its head down, does all the things it needs to do, comes out the other side and is now back to its probably original position of being one of the fastest growing economies in Europe. So, you know, we absolutely took our pain, and individuals, every individual in the country of Ireland were impacted because there was a new tax rate introduced in direct consequence of the financial collapse of our banking system in Ireland. So we've all personally felt the pain of having to go through that period, but through diligence and accountability, by and large, we came out the other side, and you know, we're a better economy for it now today.
Yeah. I mean, sure. And sometimes you have to go through that shock to shore up your financial system.
Hopefully, the lessons learned will mean it'll never be repeated again. You know,
that's right. Yeah,
we probably fueled by credit.
Yeah, having done it once, once was enough.
Absolutely, once was definitely enough. Yeah, it's good that we've come out the other side now, and our problems really. Almost good problems to have, in the sense that we're trying to keep ourselves competitive in the face of the opportunity and growth of our economy.
You know, one of the things that sort of been bandied about this week here in DC is, you know, I'll call it the confidence question. And this really is more directed at emerging companies in Ireland thinking that they can't or shouldn't expand to the US. Because they don't have what it takes. You know, hear that refrain, you know, an awful lot. And there is that, again, referring back to my father, 89 years, I think he's accepted a compliment once. And that's the Tipperary mentality. But how do we encourage companies of all sizes to look at the US or look out, you know, outside the EU for expansion?
Yeah. And I think sometimes companies can be overwhelmed by the sheer vastness of the US market.
Yes.
Because it's so exponentially large by comparison to, per se, the Irish market. I think companies should be encouraged to really focus on the commonalities between the two markets, that Irish-US affinity that I've spoken to, the English language, the can-do positive attitude that Americans generally have towards business. And it is, generally speaking, a business-friendly country to operate and to do business in. I think one of the concerns for companies would obviously be, how do you break into the US market and compete if you're not at scale? So it's nearly hard to feel that you can go in small and make any inroads in terms of the size of the market. But I'm a firm believer, you know, you got to start somewhere in life, I suppose. And I think having boots on the ground, and certainly that's what we've done, is a really big first step, even just to have a small base there, to have somebody on the ground representing your business, going out to meet potential clients, getting a better understanding of the market is probably the first step for companies in terms of going over there and doing your homework, I suppose, before you make any large scale investment, really understanding the market, really understanding your end customer, and understanding the business environment, you know, because they do change, even just the regulations or the corporate reporting requirements, which can be sometimes a little bit onerous in the US. Understanding all of that, so you're forearmed and forewarned, etc.
Well, and, think, and
is real practical advice.
And within that, understanding some of the regional differences, because operating in California is going to be different than operating.
I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode of AGG Talks Cross-Border Business. As you can tell, my discussion with Lorna ended a little bit abruptly because of a technology issue, probably on my computer, where all of a sudden during the recording, we couldn't hear each other. So in any event, I want to thank Lorna for her time and great insights into the Brand Ireland discussion. Lorna, as listeners will know if you don't already, is just a wonderful leader and a wonderful business person and advocate in Ireland. So this is Mike Burke. Thank you again for tuning into AGG Talks Cross-Border Business, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Thank you.